This is Soulful Living on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Terry Williams.
Hey, wherever you are in the world today, I welcome you to another 30 minutes of Soulful Living here at Empower Radio. If you're just tuning in to me, let me just say that I have been studying energy work and shamanic work, intuitive practices, for a long time. And sometimes it's been a little difficult for me to articulate my work. And my guest today, Meg Beeler, as I'm reading the introduction of her book, her latest work, Weave the Heart of the Universe into Your Life, I thought, oh my God, this woman, this shaman, is clearly articulating so many of the things that I've been thinking for a really long time. And I am super excited to share her inspiring work with all of you today. So welcome to Soulful Living, Meg.
Well, thank you, Terry. It's wonderful to be on with you, and thank you for the compliment.
You're so welcome. I remember chatting briefly with your publicist, and she had said to me, you're going to absolutely love her. Her work is magic. And as I'm reading through your book, I tend to agree. It's magical. And I really, really appreciate the years of wisdom and effort it must have taken to get to this point. So share a little bit about your history here.
Okay, well, about 25 years ago now, I had a friend who was working with a man from the Andes in Cusco, Peru, and she brought him to the Bay Area, and I had never met anyone who spoke so directly from the heart, and I was really taken with him. You know, I'd always been a spiritual person and connected with nature, but I hadn't really found my true path yet. So within a few months, I found myself, surprisingly, since my daughter was quite young at the time, going off to the Andes with Ameriko Yabar, my first teacher, and my beloved teacher. So several things I discovered that opened worlds to me. The first one was every place we went, every sacred site, had held so much magic and energy so that he would tell us to sit and meditate and you'd have these amazing visions. And I had had some sense that places held energy, but it became much more clear to me and exciting to me that here's a culture where people are living in reciprocity with everything, a central belief system of the Caros of the High Andes is that everything is alive, like so many animist cultures. The stones, the mountains, the rivers. And we might call that the spirit of something. We might call that in the West the consciousness of something or the energy of something. But they all refer to the fact that our world is a vibrating universe, and we can engage with all the parts of that and the whole of it in very healing and wonderful ways. So anyway, I went back to the Andes four times over the course of a number of years, including a trek to the sacred mountain Ausangate, which is, I'm proud to say, I hiked to 17,500 feet. And it was absolutely beautiful. One of the things that's really important about the mountains, people who live in the high mountains, is that the energy is very pure. So the whole culture is weaves around the idea that you can, individuals and communities can release the density and heaviness to the earth, to the wind, to the water, to fire, and take in the lighter energy of those elements or the high mountains or, various other things to really transform how you experience the world and perceive the world.
Well, two things. I feel like those areas have really been, they're like untouched, so they're untouched by Western influence so much that people really have the opportunity to see how traditions can flourish. And secondly, I just want to say that my husband and I, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, hiked up a mountain here in Michigan. It's the Porcupine Mountains. And little known, I mean, he had lived in Michigan his whole life and never really even knew that there was a such thing as the Porcupine Mountains. But we got to the top, and it's nothing nearly 17,000 feet by any means. But we got to the top, and I found myself so emotional. I felt so connected to nature, probably more connected to nature and the cosmos than I had my entire life. So I can get a sense of how you must have felt when you accomplished that feat and that that deep connection to everything that was around you.
Right. And synchronicity will have it. The real purpose of that trip, I discovered, was not for me to go to that sacred mountain. That was part of it. That was the draw for me, but to be taken to this other place called Koyariti, which is a sacred glacier that's had for hundreds of years, has had there's been a, you know, countrywide ceremony to go to the glacier and collect the pure water from the glacier and bring it back to the community.
Wow.
And that, just as we were leaving, we were introduced to what I refer to as the Karo Stone. That's a huge basaltic, you know, as big as a living room, basaltic rock that had more energy and power than any place I've ever been. I mean, it was like you could stand back from it and feel it. And it was an entrance into the void.
Mm.
And it's what the Karo, the place the Karo used to do their visioning, one of the places.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they were one of the peoples that carried prophecy about these changing times. And that's why they came out of basically no contact with Westerners 50-some years ago and came down from the mountains. But the other thing I wanted to say about Porcupine Mountain, when, you know, most of us cannot spend our time in these wonderful places all the time.
Right.
So one thing my friend Jenny Anderson started and I've continued was to figure out how to bring this way of perceiving and living and engaging with the mountains and the trees and everything back to our communities. So we began going to the seven sacred mountains around the San Francisco Bay and doing ceremony. And that has continued with various people for years and years and years now. Not just people who do Andean practices, but other people. There's a place on Mount Tamalpais where you know, you go and there will have been three other offerings left that day, kind of thing. So what's fabulous about it, and part of the reason I wrote the book, is to say we don't have to go. We learn incredible things from these wisdom keepers, and we can incorporate them into our own lives wherever we are.
Right.
And I have a part in the book about engaging with weeds, because not everybody has beautiful trees around them.
Right.
Or whatever, you know, finding one tree in the park to talk to. So I live on a very small mountain. It's only 2,400 feet. And, you know, I engage with this mountain every day, and it gives me a lot of support. One of the things that I've learned from this work, or that I experience from this work, is that I'm never alone.
Mm-hmm.
I can go talk to the tree outside my window or sit with a plant in my garden. And because I have relationships with them, they feed me in just incredible ways. And so it's a huge antidote to the separation and isolation that people in this culture feel.
Mm-hmm. Well, I totally resonate with what you're saying. I've been studying in my own community, you know, with whatever tools I could find. I've not been in a position to travel, you know, outside of the country to learn from the elders and that. So I've had to kind of develop my own sense of connection to the plants, to nature, to animals, based upon experiences that I've had, works that I've studied, and, you know, kind of like you, creating my own sense of sacred space in every place that we are. You know, you mentioned in your book Thich Nhat Hanh, and of course, he's one of my very favorite teachers, and he talks about connecting with nature and peace is every step, and, you know, let your feet, as your feet kiss the earth, connect with nature. And that's kind of how I've represented my own life and how I've moved through life. And one of the things that I really, really appreciate about your work is that you include 84 at least, you know, different practices that people can incorporate into their life right now. They don't have to travel around the world to learn these tools. They can reach into to your work and connect with something that they can incorporate into their lives right now. And it's beautiful.
Right. And I guess I want to say about those practices, in the Andes, as I mentioned about the light and heavy energy, these are not direct practices from the Andes. These are interpretations, translations that I and sometimes other people developed over time. Mm-hmm. And the reason they're so important to me is that when my teenage daughter was metaphorically drowning and unable to cope with life at the same time that my parents were needing more and more that I couldn't really give them, and you know, life just felt life was overwhelming. I turned to these practices more and more to move through each day, to find, to release the grief and the frustration and all the things that me every single day, every hour of every day, to release them and take in other energy so that I could move through each day. And it was maintenance primarily. It wasn't any
I love that terminology. Vision. Yeah, no, I love that you call it maintenance, because that too is really a part of our everyday living as humans. You know, we maintain our house, we maintain our refrigerator, we maintain our car, but how often do we look at it as maintaining ourselves for perseverance?
And maintaining our spirit.
Yes, exactly. And maintaining our spirits. That's absolutely beautiful. So one of the things that you talk about in the book is energy alchemy. Can you give the listeners an insight into what that means?
Absolutely. Energy alchemy is a really a process, a system of releasing what you no longer need and filling with something else so that you can create a new story. Mm. The process involves engaging with nature primarily as a way of, doing this, releasing and filling and reconnecting. So the intent of it is to open beyond our small selves, you know, the little egoic poor me person, so that it's like our feelers are out into the world and we're giving and receiving from the world. And it changes your perspective and your perception of everything to do that. Mm. So that, for example, I mean, sometimes it's very practical. You're in the grocery store and somebody's acting out and you have a practice of, energy protection so that you do that. Or you have a practice of energy releasing, and when somebody yells at you, you release it and you take a moment, and then you can come back to your life and you're not carrying it. Mm-hmm. And in this, I mean, especially today, we're in, the memorial of 9/11 and all this world natural disasters happening everywhere. People are very stressed. My Pilates teacher was talking about taking care of our adrenals the other day. We're so overwhelmed with grief that we don't even know how to cope. Mm-hmm. And the grief is there. I mean, I feel it all the time. And I do this maintenance stuff every day. I wake up and meditate and stretch and connect with everything, but I still feel it. And so I know if I'm feeling it, everybody else is feeling it. Mm-hmm. Gangbusters. So energy alchemy is a way of shifting your whole being in the world so that you're more fluid. Mm-hmm. And the fluidity is really central. You used that word fluidity earlier. If you can flow like water with what's happening rather than being stuck behind the dam of feelings or the dam of fright, life becomes much easier. And we're all, we know, us spiritual people know that this is only the beginning of the challenges that humans are going to face because of what we've done. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, I was thinking yesterday, it's just not fair. All these people suffering, they didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's the earthquake or the flood or the hurricane, but collectively, we chose to separate ourselves from nature, and we chose to see the world on an extractive basis, get what we can from it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's coming back to bite us now.
Well, yeah.
Anyway, the fluidity is really important.
Yeah, and reciprocity. You know, you talked about that, giving and receiving. And
right.
And we have taken so much without giving back. And I think that it's really important to live that lifestyle of reciprocity, whether it's to the earth, whether it's to humans, whether it's to all beings. And at least for me, that is a practice that I've really been becoming more consciously aware of, how I interact with the earth, how I interact with the animals around me, and the humans. You know, how am I interacting with life so that I can create a deeper sense of reciprocity? I love that. I love that you mentioned that. And you also mentioned living with grief. And I think that so many people are living with grief and they're not even aware that that's what's happening with them, that they're grieving about something.
Yes.
That's deep.
Charles Eisenstein was saying, I was listening to him the other day, and he was saying, it's so pervasive that, like you say, we're not aware of it. And so it becomes this density around us that creates a fog.
Mm-hmm.
We can't, our hearts can't open because there's so much density. And that's part of what energy alchemy is consciously, with intent, releasing the density.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing about energy alchemy, and this is taken directly from how people in the Andes work with energy, is you don't have to identify it the way we do in our psychological culture. You don't have to say, oh, I'm depressed, or I'm in despair, or I'm grieving, or I'm mad, or I'm whatever. I mean, sometimes that's helpful, but you can feel in your body when something is off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have expressions about that. It hurt my heart. I feel it in my gut. When you feel that, you can immediately release whatever it is without even having to identify it.
Mm-hmm.
And gift it, not releasing it in a bad way, but gifting it to the earth or gifting it to the air.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the most simple practices is, say, I notice some density, so I breathe it out into the air, and I breathe in fresh air, and I breathe out the density, and I breathe in fresh air. And I'm gifting, the air doesn't care what kind of energy it is. It's just energy, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm gifting one kind of energy and exchanging it for another. So it's just, that's part of the fluidity of keeping things going.
And
does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. I mean, to me, it makes perfect sense. It's like a gatha, only it's a gatha with an unseen action behind it, you know, right? It's an unseen action. You're saying this and you're intending for that sense of reciprocity again to fulfill whatever the experience is and to help alleviate whatever form of suffering might be happening within in your body or your heart, your mind, your spirit. So I think it's amazing. It's a beautiful practice. Really, it's lovely.
Yeah. And I just
simple.
Want to add one thing about reciprocity. I'm really glad you picked up on that word. It's not how we experience it and define it in the West, in English at least. Reciprocity in the Andes, and the reciprocity I'm talking about, is a kind of generous offering without an expectation that you will get something directly back.
Right.
It's like going out and loving the world today and not thinking, oh, nobody loved me back, so I'm going to stop.
Right.
But just doing it and then knowing that the universe will bring it back to you.
Right.
That's a very hard attitude to shift into, I think, for most of us, because we're taught, you know, especially if you work in the corporate world, you're taught about, you know, competing with everybody and getting what you can and all this stuff. And so to be generous, just to be generous and know that it'll flow back to you in some way, but not how, is a challenge. I tell a story in the book about the San people who are called the Bushmen. They have a practice of, between the different tribal groups, they'll have a person that they exchange with. And so if you and I were in these two different tribal groups, I would make you a gift. And the next time we met, I would give it to you. And sometime, maybe a year later, maybe 2 years later, who knows, you'd give me a gift back.
Mm.
And I really love the idea that, I mean, it expresses what we're talking about with reciprocity, that that there's a kind of trust in the universe and a belief that that we all really do love each other.
Yeah.
And we'll be taken care of.
It's a true generosity of spirit. And, you know, as you said, trusting that we all love each other, that honoring that deep connection to all that is, because we are all connected.
Right.
You know, so it's really honoring that true connection and generosity of spirit. Okay, so listeners, I'm chatting with Meg Beeler. We're talking about her latest work and her work in general, right? As she has walked through life, Weave the Heart of the Universe into Your Life. It is a beautiful book that offers you some insight into letting go, right, of that which no longer serves your highest good, and different experiences that you can take day to day. One of the things that I'm guided to really ask is, if somebody was listening for the first time and this was a new experience for them, this work overall, what would you say would be a way for them to really connect with nature as we, you know, as we get ready to close out the show? We've only got a few minutes left, but I'd love for you to share something simple that they can use to really connect with nature.
So I'll use a tree as an example. Most of us have a park or a place that we walk. And if you're paying attention as you walk, you'll notice that certain trees draw you. Or maybe you only have one tree. But what you can do is go up to that tree, and if you're too embarrassed to say anything out loud, you can just hold on to it. Or you can put your back up against it. And you can silently ask the tree to connect with you and give you a message. I often use this practice with my soul retrieval clients. After a healing, I'll have them go outside and find a tree and ask for a message. And these are often people who don't have any shamanic practice. And I continually am amazed that there has never been one person who didn't get a message.
Mm. Wow.
So it's available to us. We simply have to ask.
Right.
Another little example, I was at a silent meditation retreat where I, you know, we didn't talk during meals. And so I sat in the same place next to these weeds. And I was taken into the world of these dead grasses in the sunlight and waving in the wind. And it was like a transformative thing. You know, I'm used to hiking and seeing everything, but here I was in one little place, and it was very beautiful. So that also taught me the power of connecting with anything.
Mm, especially weeds, right? People have a preconceived, not that you do, right? But so many people have a preconceived notion of what a weed is, and not realizing that it is a life and it has inner beauty and a purpose all in of itself.
Right. And the other, you asked a person new to this. Well, one thing is just to observe.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of life going on around you. And if you stop looking at your cell phone and talking and everything and just take a silent walk,
mm-hmm.
It's really, then you start noticing the bird sounds and how the leaves are falling off the trees and the lizard that runs under your feet. So again, you're taken outside of your small self into mm-hmm. the larger world. And, you know, I always invite people to schedule a free half hour call with me if you have some issue, or if you want to figure this out more, or you're just trying to see if this would be good kind of work for you. I really love talking with people and hearing their stories and what they need and trying to help them figure out what's a good plan to take the next step. So you can go on my website, megbeeler.com, and set up a call like that anytime.
Yeah. And
of course, read the book.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, I think that it's beautiful that you put that out there for everybody. All of Meg's information will be on the Soulful Living page here at Empower Radio. And it's really an opportunity to have a discovery call with you and move further. And again, grab the book. I told my husband this morning, I didn't get halfway through the book. I loved it. And I felt like I wanted to really break it down and study it. So if anybody's listening, let's study it. Let's work with Meg and get this work out there and elevate our souls and elevate our lives. So thank you so much for being here with me today, Meg. I feel like we just touched a little bit of the work that you're doing and are sharing in the world.
Well, right, Terry, I'm incredibly appreciative, and I wish I could find out about your work more too, so maybe another time.
Yes, we're going to have to do this again.
Thank you so much.